The record spinning here on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman. University of Washington students head back to campus next week. While the state legislature did increase funding for the UW and other state colleges and universities, money is still a question when it comes to higher education. It factors into everything from the kinds of courses the university can offer to the faculty that it retains. Just some of the challenges that face University of Washington President Michael Young, who is with me in the studio today. It's great to have you in.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Let's just start with the news, I guess. Last week, a group of business leaders went to the UW Regents meeting and presented them with a rationale they had for why the university should admit more in-state students and should allocate more funds to retaining faculty. First off, do you agree with these business leaders that those are priorities for the university?
Absolutely. It wasn't exactly just admit more in-state students, but it was increase the size of the student body. There is a significant demand. A recent study suggests there are going to be 25,000 unfilled jobs. That means 90 days or more these jobs have been open, largely in the high-tech sectors right now, 50,000 within about 5 years. So we just need more educated kids.
Are we talking about all of those students on the Seattle campus or in some of the branch campuses the U has?
Well, it was for the entire university, so it included the Tacoma and the Bothell branches as well, where we probably do have some room for growth. Right now, we're largely constrained by physical resources on the Seattle campus. We have some room for growth on the other campuses.
What will it take to increase the student population?
Well, it will probably take resources from the state. At this point, the students are paying an increasingly large percentage of the cost of education. 20 years, our cost structure hasn't changed. 20 years ago, it cost us about $16,500 to educate a student. In inflation-adjusted dollars, it's almost exactly the same 20 years later. But 20 years ago, the state paid 80% of that, and the students only 20. Now the state's paying about less than 70%. Or less than 30%.
Right.
The students are paying over 70. So we can't do it on tuition alone. We really do still need state help.
It, does that hold true as well for retaining quality faculty?
It does. State support is a relatively small percentage of our overall operating revenue, but it's critical to the instructional part of the university. So our capacity to retain this great faculty that bring in so many research dollars, that do these extraordinary inventions, that teach these remarkable students are all critical. Retaining those faculty are critical, and our faculty are so good that they are constantly in demand at every other major university in the country.
I know that the state legislature did increase its allocation for higher education during the last session, and obviously it wasn't enough for you. How much more do you think the state needs to invest in higher ed?
Well, we are right now per full-time equivalent student, per FTE, we are right now, in terms of state support for higher education, somewhere between 47th and 49th.
Ouch.
We're just a few dollars above Mississippi. And I think it would be nice to be average and not Mississippi.
We're talking with Michael Young. He's president of the University of Washington. Among those unfilled jobs that you were mentioning, a lot of them have to do with computer sciences, biosciences, the STEM group of science, technology, engineering, math kinds of things. And I know that there's been a lot of discussion at the university administrative level about how to increase the offerings, because right now there just isn't enough room for all the qualified students to enter. One of those was to create a variable tuition structure that would require, wouldn't require, but it would just cost more if you wanted to study computer engineering than if you wanted to study, I don't know, French, for example. That didn't pan out, did it?
Well, it didn't pan out in part because we never really had much of a conversation about it. We didn't have much of a conversation in part because we have the GET program here in the state, which makes it difficult to make rational decisions about tuition. I mean, the GET program is this sort of wonderful subsidy for the upper middle class, which I find interesting in a very populous state, but it made it difficult to have any kind of real conversation. So it's not that it didn't pan out as much as we just really haven't had a serious conversation about
because
it.
All parents are paying a fixed amount per credit into the GET. To the GET funds?
Right, and the GET is pegged to whatever the highest tuition is in the state, regardless of what the students actually end up paying. So it's a kind of an irrationally structured program, but it's structured in a way that makes it difficult to do rational things with respect to structuring tuition.
I was interested to read in the Seattle Times today about a federal program that helps children of immigrant farm workers enter college. And I'm assuming that these are the first college students and their families. And I wondered what other kinds of programs exist for other first in their family college students. It's not just farm workers who may be sending their kids off to college.
Well, the University of Washington may have among the strongest programs in the country. We have just about a third of our undergraduate students are actually first-generation college students, which is remarkable mm-hmm. for a major research university. But they're enabled to be there in part by the Husky Promise. And what the Husky Promise says is if your family income is below a certain level between Pell Grants and state aid, which is turning out to be inadequate these days, and the money we put into scholarship funds, you'll pay no tuition or fees.
Who picks up the difference?
We pick it up at the university. Wow. We do it between fundraising and reallocation of tuition dollars.
So there's the money that you might need to go to right. school, but it seems that there are probably also cultural things that are gulfs between the kids that you mentioned whose parents pay into the GET fund, whose parents may have gone to college, who are accustomed to the mores on a university campus, and those who are entering for the first time who don't have that experience.
You're absolutely right. And providing support services to help everybody understand how to best engage college, how best to take advantage of the opportunities that are available, what needs to be done is very important. We have a whole range of services, some through our Office of Undergraduate Affairs, some through our Office of Minority and Diversity Affairs, to help students engage as well as they possibly can. If I just may add, what turns out to be interesting is one of the consequences of that is we have for minority and underrepresented students among the best graduation rates in the country of any major public research university. We're right at the top.
Do you know who those freshmen are when they enter the university so that they don't necessarily have to search through the system to find the help they need?
Well, we know who is first generation if they say so on their application.
Right.
Not all do, but we know that. We know if they applied for financial aid what their socioeconomic situation is, and we can steer them to those. I mean, everything is voluntary. We don't force kids to take advantage of any particular program, but certainly encourage, and we're going through orientation right now, a big part of which is to try to make people aware of what services are available.
You only have to come to the university district to see all the students oriented themselves. Michael Young is our guest. He's president of the University of Washington. And we were talking earlier ago about those business leaders wanting to expand the population on the university campus to help educate students for these unfilled jobs. And it got me to thinking about why one might get a college education. And it's not just necessarily to enter the job market, is it? There are other reasons that academia exists. And I'm wondering, from your vantage point, I mean, clearly money producing the next generation of American workers is important, but what other things do you think should be at the bottom of a bachelor's degree education here?
Well, I think the most important part of it is we are creating great leaders and great citizens. And all the data show in such a powerful way how college education can really help with that in terms of people's civic engagement, in terms even of their own health, far lower rates of addiction and incarceration, far lower rates of the use of the social safety net. Their children are better prepared for school when they start. They're much more likely to be engaged in charitable and civic activities. We're trying to create citizens as well.
Is that because of exposure to certain kind of classes, exposure to different kinds of people? Where does that kind of education come in?
Well, the answer to that is yes. It's all of those things and more. They interact with students. I mean, our students come from all over the United States, indeed all over the world. They gain a capacity to sort of see things through the eyes of others. They have a chance to argue about fundamental values with each other. They learn how to work cooperatively in teams to get things done. It's very broad. And then a very broad range of extracurricular organizations and activities, too.
Well, now that brings me to sort of the whole brave new world of college education, which are the online course offerings. I know the university has some programs that are online only, but there's that whole world of MOOC. I had to write it down. Massive only online course. That's what that stands for. Stanford, Yale, Harvard, the University of Washington are all offering these courses. How do we achieve the exposure to one another when we're studying at home off a computer screen?
Well, I think there are sort of two answers to that. I mean, some of the things that are taught through these online courses really may be different, and they may be appropriate and useful for the people who are place-bound and time-bound and otherwise find this an effective way to gain a certain part of the education that they need. So that's one answer. So it isn't for everybody. The online isn't for everybody, and the on-campus isn't for everybody, but it's thinking about access. How do we provide the broadest range of opportunities for the broadest range of people? And they will differ depending on people's circumstances. The second thing is, I think we're beginning to see technology evolve in ways where students can interact with each other and with the professor through technological medium. We just started an online degree last year, an undergraduate degree, that will be a real UW degree, because there'll be significant, no class will be larger than 35, and there'll be significant interaction between the students and professors. And that will help, I think.
That's the early childhood program?
That's correct.
At some point, are we going to look at all these grand buildings on the Seattle campus and half of them will be empty?
Well, I wouldn't predict that. And again, because I think circumstances, interests differ significantly. In fact, with all the expansion of online opportunities and things like that, our applicant pool went up almost 20% this year. So with all that available, more kids wanted to be on this campus, not fewer.
Is that one way to expand the undergraduate population, as business leaders were demanding?
Well, not increasing the applicant pool, increasing the number of seats available is the way to do it.
We're talking with Michael Young. He's the man at the top at the University of Washington. Just back to that idea of money, I know that you have talked about the idea of expanding the income-generating capacity of researchers and faculty members here by patenting discoveries or licensing ideas and discoveries as well. Does the university actually see a lot of income from that end of things?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is I mention in a footnote the income capacity of that. But the truth of the matter is I think that's important, because that's at least one major vehicle for getting the great ideas and the great inventions off campus into the lives of real people. I mean, if we cure cancer but it stays in a test tube, it's interesting cocktail party conversation, but nobody gets better. And the commercialization process is that vehicle for getting it into the lives of real people. And if it produces some additional income, as it seems to be, we're in the top five now in the country in terms of the number of companies we're spinning out. We're number one in licensing. Those are good things, but they're good things in some large measure because they do good.
You're about just over 2 years into this job, if I do my math correctly. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's correct.
Now, you are the head of what people at the University of Washington would say is the flagship institution of higher learning in the state of Washington. In addition to running the university itself, what is your role in that position?
Well, I think we at the University of Washington, and I just count myself one among many, have an opportunity and an obligation to really help the state understand the centrality of the university for creating the kind of state that we really want to live in. And I certainly mean economically, to be sure, but much more than that, culturally, socially, politically, and making those connections and cooperating holistically with the state becomes, I think, a very important agenda item, and advocacy for that central.
So essentially you're telling me you're the UW's lobbyist in chief?
Oh, no, we never lobby. We're prohibited from lobbying, but I certainly educate. I'm an educator.
The spokesman in chief for the University of Washington. As I mentioned, classes start next week. Students, as you said, are here. They're wandering around. Briefly, what are you most looking forward to this academic year?
Well, I think we have a lot of exciting things going on. There's been a real focus on our undergraduate education over the past few years. It's really first rate, but maybe not as well known as our graduate programs. But it's also the case that when you come to a research university, you can have a transformative intellectual experience. And we want to make sure our undergraduates understand how to get that, how to engage in it, how to ensure we've scaled up those opportunities so they engage in research or study abroad or all these other things. And that's going to be a big agenda this year.
Michael Young, president of the University of Washington. If you're driving through the U District, September 25th is the day that classes start. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're tuned to The Record. I'm Marcy Silman.